Hi, everyone. Welcome to Second Wind Women. I'm here today with Corey Micah. Corey is the founder of Calm Within Swim. It is an adult swim school where she helps adults overcome their fear of water through a structured, mindset-first approach. You can learn more at her website.
AdultSwimLesson.com is the website.
Oh, so you teach swim lessons online?
We do teach swim lessons online.
I did
online.
Not get that when we talked before. Tell me more.
Yeah, back in what feels like forever ago now, back in 2029, I decided, put our stuff online because we have people who fly in for our program because how we teach is very unique and special. And so we'd get people who come in from all over the place. So people would always ask, do you teach here? Do you teach there? And I'm like, I'd love to teach in all the places. Can't. Well, so online teaching, right? That's the way you can do it. So I thought this needs to be accessible to more people. So I kind of on a whim put it out as, online courses and was unsure, was that going to work? But amazingly, because we're talking about adults, right? They are self-motivated and I'm curious. And so you can take the information and go to a public pool and do it step by step. And we're giving people information that is so small and granular and filling in missing pieces that when they take traditional swimming lessons, they're like, why is everything going so fast? I just talked to a woman yesterday and she's like, I'm in the beginning class. But everybody already seems to know how to swim. Like something seems wrong. I don't feel like I'm in the right place. And so we answer those questions. And ultimately, everybody's their own teacher, having the right like steps to go in and experiment and get out of the old patterns of swimming is front crawl and working really hard. Like there's a lot of myths about what swimming is. And so we break that down. And so people are quite successful. Doing it online. So it kind of blew me out of the water that it works, but it does. And I have, students all over the planet now who can learn to swim with us, which is really fun.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. I was going to ask, do people bring their laptop to the side of the pool?
When I very first did it, I put my laptop on a kickboard and floated it in the pool and took a picture of it, right? You have to have some catchy picture, right? So yeah.
My gosh, that is a catchy picture. Wow. Okay. So how do people, I guess people find you online, but how do people hear about your program? I never in a million years would have thought that that was a possible thing to teach swimming lessons online.
Well, kind of what tickled my idea on it. There are several things, but one of the things, you think when people have a how-to question, how do I do this physical thing. Generally speaking, people go to YouTube, right? And so there's all kinds of tutorials there. So that's when I really started our YouTube channel. And because there's all kinds, people go there all the time for learn to swim tips or other, how-to things. And so that's really our kind of primary place, social place, is to put out, short how-tos on there. And so that's how people, by and large, on the national or international platform have found us is, how to keep water out of my nose. How do I see underwater? How do I tread water? Which everybody thinks is a beginning thing. And it's really, a much later thing. So,
yeah. Okay. Wow. All right. Yeah. I remember when I took swimming lessons as a kid. And I remember when they had us go in the water with our clothes on and we had to take off our jeans and tie them up and blow them up like a balloon. But I guess if you'd never done a swimming class, you wouldn't know that that was even a possibility, right? That's interesting.
You wouldn't know that's a possibility. And I always wonder about that. I've taught that. I've done that. I'm like, does anybody actually do that in reality? I don't know.
if you don't have anything to help you float and jeans are heavy, right? I don't know how long they'd hold water being wet. I don't know.
Hold air. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. You do have to. Even when you do those in the pool simulation, you do have to refill them.
You do.
Yeah. I think the thing that it does teach is it teaches a certain amount of presence and slowing down. Like if you really were in a situation like that, that's really what people need. They need to be able, if you're in a, fell off the boat and I got to wait hours and hours and hours for somebody to come back and get me. the biggest thing that you need is calm presence. And yeah, that's the biggest thing that you need. So I think, yeah, being able to do the challenge of tying up your clothes while you're floating and not getting yourself overtired doing it and being able to slow down in the process of doing it, I think that's the essential lesson that people get when they learn that, how to do that. It's less about actually floating on your clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have a lot of people who seek you out? Like, you know, we're recording this on January 7th. Do you have a lot of people who seek you out at the beginning of the year? Because they're like, this is the year I'm going to learn either how to swim or how not to be afraid of the water.
Yeah, absolutely. Our January classes are full, which is amazing. We're in Seattle and we actually teach outside, but they're full and those brave souls come out. The water's 94 degrees, so the water's totally fine. It's amazing. It's the getting out afterwards that's a little chilly.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's a wonder. It provides a little wonderful drop of tropicalness in the middle of winter. So yeah, totally. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, people, yeah.
So how common is it for people to be afraid of water?
That's a great question that I love to talk about because it's actually super common. Over half of adults don't know how to swim or afraid in deep water, oceans and lakes. People, I always tell my adult students who do come out that they're very special because, right, that like, oh, they have this thing, they know what it is, and they're willing to do something about it. Because once they learn how to swim, then they go to places and they start to look around with a more careful eye. And they're like, I just assumed that all these people could swim. But yeah, why do all those people have dry hair? And why are there more people sitting on the sidelines than actually in the water, right? We love being on and around the water, but more people don't know how to swim than do know how to swim.
That's fascinating. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I have a friend who's from Central Asia and nobody there knows how to swim because the only, you know, from kind of a wild area because the only real water they have is rivers and that's not a good place to learn how to swim.
Right. Yes. Yeah. No, I do. Yeah. We have students who come from India and I've heard several times about learning to swim in a well. And I'm like, that sounds like a terrible idea. I think it's a different kind of well than I think about here in the U.S. where I just
might be like a big square thing.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, stories of children falling into wells and, you know, things like that from, I think they're more like ponds, but what we would call a pond here.
Or
but,
a cistern, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. But oftentimes have these straight sides.
Oh my gosh. And, that's and scary. Are deep.
Yeah. No. So it's understandable. And I think I also say parents have two kind of very loving choices around teaching their children to swim. One is to teach them to be afraid, because if you're afraid, then you're never going to get in and you're never going to drown. And so when you're talking about places where the water, you have very variable water, right? Rivers or ponds or animals in them or, you know, currents and that sort of thing. Teaching somebody to be afraid so they don't go in. It's not a bad strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was going to say it's a strategy.
Yeah. It's not a bad strategy. So I don't, you know, blame people or want people to feel badly about that being the strategy that they have. And the other one is that, you know, parents will like push their kids into learning to swim. And so we see that too. And for some people that's successful and some people that is not successful.
Yeah. 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 I remember as our previous lead-in conversation, I remember getting up and going to the swimming pool at like 6:30 or 7 in the morning as a kid in the, you know, the cold summer mornings being like, oh, why do I have to do this? Mm. But now I know how to swim. But I am afraid of the ocean for sure. And partially, I think because, I live in land, like many, many people do live in a landlocked area. All that around here are big lakes and lakes are dirty and gross. And I'm not a big fan of jumping in lakes. Swimming pool's fine. But the ocean, like I went to Mexico a few years ago and I was walking on the beach and the ocean just picked me up, flipped me upside down, just like that. And I was like, oh shit, this is some major power happening here. And I think it's, you know, like kind of the fear of the unknown, which is different than being afraid of like, you know, a bathtub, right? So different levels of being afraid of water, some reasonable, some less.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For sure. I mean, and to be fair to the person who is afraid in a bathtub. Generally, I don't think people are afraid of the bath, but putting their face in the water, you know, it's an environment that you can't breathe.
Right.
When your face is in the water. So it makes sense. It's biological, right? And it's, and I just offer for people to have a lot of kindness and compassion mm-hmm. when they come up against the feeling of fear. Because anytime we sort of diminish that, it doesn't give us opportunity to understand it and help it unfold. It's there for a reason and a purpose. And can we be curious with it? Can we see which pieces are still needed and which pieces are not needed? You know, that kind of things. We want to just, and like you say, for the ocean, for open water, people are much more willing to say, yeah, it's a good idea. And, but that's the place too, to say, you know, I'm open water swimmer. I swim in lakes and oceans and things, but I don't just hop in anywhere, anytime. I learn about it. I investigate it. Yeah. I use that sense of fear to help me know, is this the right place and the right time and situation for me to be swimming in?
Yeah. And that's, and this is really why I wanted to talk with you, because of your focus on, you know, teaching adults how to deal with fear and how to use it effectively as a tool. And that's kind of what we're getting into here about making decisions about, you don't know what you don't know. And to just say that all fear is just going to hold you back, that's not logical or helpful. It's dangerous.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think about, you know, my, myself, I don't have, fear of swimming per se. I do use it, like I just said, as a tool, but you know, for me, it's going to the doctor. Like I have a lot of past trauma around, you know, body kinds of things. And it shows up with going to medical situations. And so, yeah, I use the same tools to help me engage in the medical field because I do want to engage with the medical field.
Right.
Into a certain capacity. But yeah, I don't just like give myself over to it either. So how do I use these same tools to be able to take care of my health without sacrificing my mental health in order
right.
to do it?
And if you're not paralyzed by fear, then you can do that investigative process, right? If you're paralyzed by fear, then you're not going to ever go to the doctor, right? You're mm-hmm. not ever going to get in the ocean. You're going to be like, oh, toes, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to Portugal 2 years ago, and we were on the southern coast of Portugal, and there was this nice beach, and they had a little flag. We figured out what the flag meant, and it was a long beach, and I was at the edges. I'm like, oh, that'd be a cool place to swim. And then I noticed how hard the ocean was hitting the rocks, and that there were rocks on that side, on the sides of the beach. And I was like, wait a minute, there's a reason why everybody's towards the middle, even though it's less protected from the wind.
Yeah. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you have to have the motivation, right? You have to have the motivation to, you know, look up what doctor you're going to go to or go down to the beach, right?
Well, the motivation, and I'll go back to the idea of the kind curiosity that you could be standing on the beach saying, especially if you see somebody else out there or something, you know, saying, I should be doing this and just get right. over yourself. And we're very taught in society to be judgmental to ourselves and critical and like, come on, just that pick yourself up by the bootstrap kind of mm-hmm. mentality. And it doesn't leave room for you to do exactly what you said. Like, wait, if I'm kindly curious, I can see there's rocks over there. Not a good idea. This is a better place over here. And yeah, so it really has to do with how we approach it and how we approach our own treating of ourselves.
That's very American. It's like the stereotypical like voiceover for the movie, one man, one mountain, you know, and you know, you're just out there on the beach and you see this little kid swimming way out there and you're like, why can't I do that? That little kid could do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So how did you get started? How did you decide to open your own swim school? I mean, it's kind of a unique path.
It is a unique path. It's one I think, you know, I somewhat stumbled upon in terms of that. It was something teaching swimming, lifeguarding, something I always did, you know, high school, college, the summer job, the typical summer job thing. Started very, very young in terms of it was my way to get out of having to go to summer camp that was really daycare. You know, I'll go volunteer at the pool instead. How can mom make sure that I'm occupied all summer kind of things?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And at one point, you know, remember my dad, he just kind of dropped the idea like, why don't you teach swimming for yourself? Like, why don't you teach some private lessons or do your own thing? And I think that nugget sat back in the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, went off, did college and that sort of thing. As I was trying to figure out what my grown-up life was going to be, I decided, well, give it a try. I have nothing to lose at that point in time. And so we being my now husband and I, we weren't married at the time, but it was easier to start a business than a marriage.
Yeah, to start, but yeah, probably equally as hard to maintain.
Exactly. So anyways, yeah, so we kind of gave it a shot and put our shingle out there, almost literally to putting our shingle in the before the internet days even. So yeah, so we gave it a whirl. We were working with kids mostly at that time because that's sort of the traditional path. But as I did that, you know, we would get some adults that would come in, and those were the ones who provided curiosity for me. That when you talk about motivation to continue on, my drive to want to learn something interesting and different is what's really kept me in the business all these years. And so it was those adults that I said, you know, nobody's serving them really, and I'm teaching them, but they don't feel like swimmers. Something's not right with the way that I'm teaching them. They're tuning in, but they're still petrified. They still don't feel like swimmers, even though they can do the physical tasks. And so that really built up my curiosity to see, what else do I need to be doing here? I need to be doing something different than just teaching them arms and legs. So,
yeah. So yeah, what kind of mindset things do you work on to help people feel like swimmers, whatever that means?
Yeah. Well, it was interesting earlier you said, use the word paralyzed with fear. And I think this is so good. This is kind of one of the key pieces that we miss is that paralyzed with fear is a phrase that we use, but it is literally something that happens to our body, right? I mean, you have a thought. There's a thought that comes in that literally freezes your body. Yeah. So we all know this experience, and we have the experience of like butterflies in our stomach, or like I've had the experience, actually the experience that helped me really unfold my anxiety around medical stuff is I have this feeling of a lump in my throat. I like actually thought there was something wrong. Like I must have some cancer or something because there's this feeling of lump in my throat. But it was a physiological reaction, right? So this is this body-mind connection is the piece that is missing in general instruction, because general instruction is teaching people do this and that with your arms and your legs. And then people
keep
say,
your fingers together.
Yeah. Why is it I'm not connected? I still feel stiff. They still have somewhere on the spectrum of paralyzed with fear. There's a tenseness to the body that is still there. So I'm doing the things correctly, but this body-mind connection is what's missing. And so that's the piece that we really start with is how do I, it's not just get in and just do it. It's tune into the body and see, is the body ready to get in? Is the brain and the body matching up? You know, your brain saying, go, 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 but your body is frozen, not time to go yet. It's time to bring in that kind curiosity.
Yeah. Okay. I have a crazy question for you. When I was a child, and I've talked with this about people, I've talked with people about this, and I'm not the only one who has this. Ever since I was a teenager and I saw Jaws, every time I jump off a diving board, and I'm coming up, I'm looking in the corners of the pool to see if there's something coming after me every single time. This is since I was like 12 years old.
Mm.
That's pretty common, right? Like unknown or...
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's funny you say that because I I've never completed a swimming lesson as a participant. When I, you know, as a child, I was sent to swimming lessons too. Never finished one because I knew they kept the sharks under the platform, and I was no dummy. I wasn't going to come off the platform. Yeah, kids have these great imaginations, which are wonderful and great, and some of it sticks with us as adults. And we do, you know, you do have to check it out. I do, as I said, I do open water swimming. And so I swim with people who are quite good swimmers, right? They are quite good at the mechanics of swimming, but they too, they have to deal with this mental part that we worry about things that may or may not be true. And so, yeah, I mean, I've had to do it too, to teach myself. This is my brain talking.
Right.
Let me feel into my body. Is there actually a shark biting me? No. Okay. I just checked my body. I felt around my body. No. You know, and then it's, oh my gosh, something touched me. Okay. Something touched me.
Mm-hmm.
Have I been bit? No. You know, 99.9% right. of the time. I mean, shark attacks do happen, but they're extremely rare. Right.
So apparently you can punch them in the nose too, I heard.
Okay.
If you punch them in the nose, they'll leave you alone.
All right.
Assuming they're coming straight on. But anyhow,
That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, oh. But yeah, so it's being in this practice of our brain tells us, and this happens outside of the water too. Your brain tells you all the time about terrible scenarios, and us learning how to counter that, not with arguments, other mental arguments, but how do I slow down into the body, use my senses to get true information.
Yeah.
And it actually activates a different part of your brain. So we do, you know, this is what I teach people in coaching, you know, outside of the water, is how often we need to get ourselves out of that thinking part of our brain into this, the feeling part of our brain. And mm-hmm. it makes a huge difference in the quality in our life to do this. I know I use it around lots of things. I'm thinking at the moment, politics, you know, when my brain goes down the road of politics, we don't even have to talk which side of politics. Everybody knows
right.
how contentious.
Everybody knows. Everybody's upset. Yeah.
Everybody's upset. And yeah, like how many times do I go on a walk, you know, and I realize I'm not feeling good on my walk because I'm in politics, right? And so I use a practice to get myself to pause and see, is it actually an argument in my head that's useful? Am I trying to work something out, or am I just making myself feel bad? And how I change that.
Yeah. We want to find meaning in things. That's why if you see a little shadow in the water, immediately you're like, what's the story? I got to put together, there's a shark. It's going to get me. Like, you know what I'm saying? So
absolutely.
I love what you're saying about like slowing down enough to take actual, you know, and sometimes we don't have the ability to take actual evidence because there are stories that are so displaced from us. Right. But slow down to where you're taking physical or, you know, whatever evidence you have to slow down the speed of that reaction.
Absolutely.
Really.
And I would say even in things when you talk about a story that's real distant to us that you might want to evaluate, I think it's very important for us to have a practice, or it can be very useful to do the slowing down piece for yourself, to get yourself into that other part of your brain, and then go and investigate about, if we're using politics as an example, investigate what that political message is that's coming out, right? To be able to say, okay, hang on. You can be much more logical, evaluative, you know, trust your source, you know, find your sources, that sort of thing, versus just being in the guttural reaction to the top line, you know, headline.
Yeah. And if we weren't using tools to find information that were specifically designed to make us reactionary, that would be a lot better.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
We are inundated with nervous system stimulators. And the better we get, this is where, yeah, back to this idea of New Year. If you want something for your New Year, something to help you with nervous system regulation, right? Learn to swim in a way that is helping you with nervous system regulation. Learn to sew or knit or ride a bike or whatever, these things that are helping, you can use them to help you learn to navigate your nervous system regulation so that when you do engage with all these things that are causing us to buzz as they are intended to, you have some support for you.
I'm taking a minute here to let you guys know about a new project I'm working on called Red Nose Corporate. We are running workshops to help develop communication and cohesion in corporate teams based on exercises from improv and physical theater, aka Red Nose Clown. It has some silly aspect to it, but it does have a lot of mindfulness and empathy kind of training in it as well. But look out for that at rednosecorporate.com.
Yourself.
What do you think about cold water exposure?
So this is something that I do. I don't teach it per se, but it's something that I have a personal practice of. And I do think it's a wonderful practice. I do think it's something, you know, I put a big asterisk on, as it becomes more and more popular, because I think we're going to start to see more and more injuries around it or problems around it, because as we do, we start getting competitive when I see things that are like, how long did I do it? And you need to be in for a long period, stuff like that. So you actually don't have to be in cold water for very long to have the physiological effects.
Like 2 or 3 minutes, right?
Exactly. Yes. So you don't have to be in for long. You actually want to go in gently too. You know, the whole, like this time of year, we see polar plunge where people are just like plunging themselves in. You do have to be careful of that. That can instigate a heart attack. Like,
especially if you're mixing it with drinking, by the way.
So talk about nervous system dysregulation. Like, you're all over the place. So you do have to be careful about it. I used it a few years ago. I did once a week for 52 weeks, right? Getting into the cold water after being a person who hated cold water, hated it. Like, this whole thing. I combined it with a breathwork practice to, again, regulate that nervous system. But what I found that I loved about it was to be able to practice focusing the body and the mind in order to do it. You can't, I think people who just like jump in, they're practicing disassociating their body and their mind, make themselves do it. You're still going to get the physiological benefits of the cold on the body. But I think you're missing an opportunity to treat yourself well and to, you can go further with it. You can go deeper with it. Practice this body mind regulation.
That's so fascinating. So my cousin, who's a Canadian, swam the English Channel. And for his practice, he used to go and dip in lakes in Toronto in the middle of the winter. And he got some attention for that. Because, yeah, he was, like you're talking about, like that kind of focus and maybe not, maybe just accustomizing more than disassociating. I mean, disassociating is a dunk, but a full swim, that's like another
level. It is another level. And to be able to do something, I mean, he's training, right? He's building up to it.
Oh, yeah.
He's watching his system and his body to see how it's responding. Not everybody who trains to do something like the English Channel does it. People who, you know, or they, and that's okay. Like, right. I want to like celebrate that people who train and work towards these things and make a sage decision to say no at some point, we need to celebrate that as well.
Yeah. There's that, back to the kindness, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We'd rather you go out and do big, strong adventures with the ability to say no.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's real trusting. Yeah. I've got a kid who's out doing, he does long distance hiking. And so he's out in New Zealand right now and just starting. And so that's like the faith that I put in him. Like, will you say no? You need to be able to say no to certain parts of it, right? Don't be so tied to getting that entire 3,000 miles done in a particular way. The idea is doing the 3,000 miles, but doing it in a safe, responsible way, so that you can enjoy it and live to tell it and do another 3,000 mile hike if you want to.
Do you think that's easier as a solo person than, do you think that that kind of quells the competitiveness, or do you think that it's more likely that you're going to be, you know, again, like we talked earlier about like being harsh with yourself like, which do you think, which approach do you think it leaves more space open for an actual evaluation of the situation, aside from just being like, I got to accomplish this? In your opinion, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think what matters the most is your internal and external support team, who you choose to have around you. You know, the son that's hiking and my spouse, they're both firefighters. And there are fire teams that they are happy to be around because the focus is on how do we safely do this as a team together? And there are fire teams that they don't want to be on because the focus is how can we macho our way through it and, you know, be the biggest bravado person on the team. And they're like, I'm not interested in doing that. I'm interested in us going in and getting the job done together as a team and looking out for each other. In those situations, I think that is where, yeah, you can have an element of fun competitive edge, competitive challenge to inspire, but you also have that sort of team camaraderie that is looking out though and wanting and saying success is making it through, not making it through at any cost. So I think it really, who you surround yourself with and internally too, your own internal family of voices, right? What you choose to surround yourself with there and then literally the people. So I think that makes more of the difference than whether or not you're doing it solo or as a group.
I see. Yeah. I mean, the benefit of having a trusted group is that you can do that kind of practice we talked about where you shrink back from being reactionary and evaluate the actual situation with the support of people that you know can help you evaluate the actual situation and that you trust to help you evaluate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because different people are going to see different aspects and different pieces of it. And so everybody gets to contribute that. So in that way, you know, a team can be very beneficial that different people will see different things. But yeah, it's as long as everybody's in that team environment, right? To be supportive of each other versus putting down or always trying to one-up each other. Having it be a competition as if that's always the golden thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Got to find a team that works with your mindset for mm-hmm. sure. So how much of how many classes do you teach in person? Because you said you had people fly in to do classes with you as well.
We do. We it's not just me. It's my great team.
Yes, of course. I meant you as the business.
Yeah. So we teach year round. We teach our core program is called a Foundations program. And so that's an 18-hour course that gives people the foundational information, both the mental and the physical steps around what does it really mean to swim and have this body-mind connection when you're in the water. So we probably teach two or three of those each month and move people through those and then continue their development from there, where how much they want to keep working with it and keep going. And then we have fun things like, let's go to Hawaii together and we'll do this body-mind connection where you really want with the turtles.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. How often do you do that?
So we go every other year. So our next one's in 2027. So right now is like the perfect time for people to start and like save that money and get their swimming journey going and and then have that capstone adventure in Hawaii.
I love it. It's like a built-in reward.
Yes.
Yeah. Fantastic. Is there anything else this has been a fantastic conversation. Is there anything else that we would need to cover or you'd want to kind of address?
I mean, I just really encourage people. I mean, I think I've gone over, I just can't say it enough, especially at this time of year where we're focused on goals and, new things and whatnot, is just give yourself so much love and compassion and cheering the micro steps. This is a piece that I think people were really good at seeing, like, what are the big chunks? What are the big steps? But we don't really know until you're in the minutia of trying something what the micro steps are. And when you start doing something, I mean, like for learning to swim, it's the micro step of being willing to put on a swimming suit, being willing to go investigate the times that the pools are open, and then celebrate those steps. Actually mentally give yourself, and back to this, like going, not being paralyzed with fear, but feel the physiology of, yes, not just like, okay, you did it. Like physiologically, you want to stimulate your system to celebrate these micro steps, because that's telling your brain and your body, this is what we want. This is what we're getting. This is the reward of the effort to try something new and develop something new, be it swimming or whatever. You know, I'm learning to play the harmonica, you know, doing different adventures. You know, I do all these different adventures. They help me then for something like I've overcome my fear and going to the doctor. Engage in fun things so you can also do those big things that are important.
That's fantastic. And it brings back to like, you're your own worst critic, right? And I think it's part of the, you know, because I've seen a lot of this content out for the new year where people are like, set your goals for 2026 and you know, write down your five most important goals. But the problem is if you just write down your goals, that's just a wish list, right? Until you annotate, what are the 25 steps I need to actually accomplish this goal? And I think what happens with me anyway, I'm sure it happens with many other people, is that I don't even bother to write out the 25 steps, or I get five into the 25 steps and I go, oh, this is so many steps, because I haven't celebrated any of those little steps like you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, celebrate that you're willing to look at the steps. That is, you know, that is a piece of it. I think that I did kind of recoil when you said, you know, write down the 25 steps, because one of the things you do have to be careful of is the brain goes into overwhelm very easily, which is exactly what you described. So, yeah, I mean, maybe you do let yourself do the 25 steps, or you write down enough steps to get yourself started. Okay, this is the thing that I could see. This is the one thing to get started. What's the simplest one next step that I can stay in my body for? I was looking around like, is my harmonica here? Yeah, usually my harmonica is on my desk, right? Like, put my harmonica next to the computer, you know, doing online classes, right? If my harmonica is not here, it makes it harder to, you know, take a two-minute break.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard somebody talking with, along the same line, they talk with somebody who's like an expert in, I think he wrote Atomic Habits, the guy who wrote Atomic Habits. And he was talking about very similar to what you're talking about. Say you want to work out every day, you know, if you get in your car and drive to the gym and you're there for 5 minutes and you leave, that still counts. And that's also being kind and being realistic with yourself and taking in your actual experience in a very balanced, nervous system nurturing way to make a decision instead of saying, hell or high water, get in high water.
No, my once a week for 52 weeks of getting in the cold water, sometimes that did just look like putting my feet in the water.
Yeah.
Got down to the beach, put my feet in the water, stood there. It's probably just as cold standing there in my swimsuit.
Right.
And said, you know what? I got here. This is good. I'm celebrate that. And you know what I found is when I did that is the next time I was like, okay, that was kind of disappointing, actually, when I walked away. I actually kind of did want to do more, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm back here next week. And it did the next week. I came in with this. I celebrated. And I want to get in more. It felt like less of a hurdle the next week to get in, because I had allowed myself to be myself. I didn't allow myself off to have.
Pardon?
I was going to say, I didn't allow myself off the hook, right? Like, I was still accountable to it. Celebrated what I was there for.
And allowed yourself to have the experience of being like, I'm going to be kind to myself. And also, I feel a little disappointed that I didn't do more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can have both of those things. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It's been so fantastic to talk with you, Corey. How can people find you?
Yeah. So on social media, those buzzy places want to be on there is Calm Within Adult Swim. So that's our handle in social media. And then adultswimlesson.com if you want to check out that Hawaii trip.
Fantastic. It's awesome to talk with you. I hope you have a amazing, I can't say sunny. I was going to say fluid day.
A fluid day. Actually, I'm wishing not for a fluid day with the rain that we've been having lately. Let's get a pause from that fluid.
That's Seattle.
Yeah.
Anyhow, no, it's been great to have you.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching today. I'm glad you watched the whole thing. If you could do us a favor, it would help so much if you hit subscribe. It helps give us just a little boost to keep this podcast going. Thank you.